Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
KMOX at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Now, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Where was that recording of those birds taken? Gee whiz, I don't know. Mr. Kelly, you don't look so good. Oh, sorry.
Thanks. You know, I do like your honesty, though. Right. I do like your honesty, yes. Now, I've been battling, yesterday I was sick, homesick. I've been battling cold for over a week now, and yesterday it grabbed me and wouldn't let go. Feel a lot better today, but still, you know, on the edge there. So, got to keep taking stuff and trying to get better.
So, you might pass out or something?
Oh, I don't think I'll do that.
Okay. Just curious.
There might be some other
vomiting
body sounds that are not real pleasant.
Oh.
You can ask Alex, our producer. He'll tell you that.
It's true.
Yes,
I've heard noises this morning.
Yeah.
Please get out of here.
Yeah. So I'll leave and leave you to your birds. Oh, by the way, I didn't see him yesterday, but as of like 2 days ago, we still had a hummingbird. We had two hummingbirds still.
Really?
Yeah.
Haven't seen any hummingbirds, but the monarchs are still.
Monarchs, yeah.
I thought they had already finished, but I've been surprised over the last 2 weeks or so.
Yeah, I have too. Most of the hummingbirds were gone. I thought, oh, that's probably it. But no, there's a couple that keep buzzing around, so it's pretty cool.
Because you got a cool place.
Oh, it's the best, man.
Folks, welcome and thanks for stopping by. We'll be taking a good gardening stroll shortly. You can call 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120 with questions, comments, or concerns about your yard, your landscape, your house plants, or whatever it happens to be. And I will tell you, anticipate the interior needles of your pine trees, your spruce trees, mainly the pines as opposed to the spruce, but turning brown and dropping. So this is something that just naturally occurs. As winter comes in, those interior needles are no longer functioning as far as from a health standpoint where the tree's concerned. So it says, I'm compartmentalizing you and you're going to fall off and keep the soil underneath me acidic. But on Saturday mornings, we get together. Oh, by the way, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Alex will answer the phone. All he needs is your name and where you're calling from. He doesn't need to know anything about your question or anything else. So your name and where you're calling from, that would be great. Saturday mornings, we get together and have this round table discussion. What's impacting your yard? Whoa, it's still so dry. I mean, I can't believe that it's been over a month since we've had any measurable rain, at least in my neighborhood in South City. And the ground is dry. I've got several, as you know, if you listen to my, let's say, good gardening stroll around my yard, underneath my Mugo pines, I have some coral bells. I have some Japanese painted ferns. I have a couple other, some hostas. And the other day, they were so wilted. It was unbelievable. So I had to really soak the area underneath the Mugo pine because the Mugo pine obviously is taking up a lot of moisture. And then no rain, and the ground is starting to even have some cracks in it. So not in that space necessarily, but in other areas along the street and stuff like that. But anyway, your specialty garden space, your taste of the tropics, get them ready to come inside because it's going to get cooler and cooler and cooler. Potting mixes, how to improve your soil, shearing and pruning, getting rid of those bugs and diseases and everything else, and using the information to make good decisions. So my thoughts or orchestrations are hopefully going to help you solidify your options. Of course, with the final judgment on the action is going to be yours. And by the way, this is your show, and I appreciate you inviting me into your home, your car, or wherever you happen to be listening. Another very important player is Alex, as he's producing today, he's the one who answers the phone. Again, just your name and where you're calling from. That's all he needs. I'm Mike Miller. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline since 1994. And during the week, I can come to your home and do a landscape consultation, which I call a walk and talk. And you can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. On the homepage, there's my email address and phone number where I can be reached. I've written 5 gardening books. 2 are currently available at various locations and on the internet. And by the way, today's Good Gardening Stroll is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. As I left home, the sky was just starting to be highlighted by the sunrise. And I headed north on Gravois and turned east on Spruce. At the end, as you look down Spruce, when you make that turn, at the end of the street, there is Busch Stadium. Bright red letters declare St. Louis Cardinals. And it's 57 degrees. Luckily, the game wouldn't be starting right then because in Atlanta, the hottest, I think, playoff games temperature-wise in history. I think that's what they were saying the other day. And then today with the 57, of course, the temperature is going to rise up. And there is no game today, I don't believe. I think the game is tomorrow, the first home game. So, but still, it has been pretty cool these mornings. So as I stepped out of the car and just took a look, the west side of the stadium, this is where the third base side is. That's the home of the Stan Musial statue. That's also where the Metrolink station is. And the Metrolink station is a few steps down. Surrounding Stan Musial's statue right now, there's some chartreuse, sweet potato vines. There's boxwood. That hedge is there year-round, but it's so neatly pruned. There are some red-blooming coleus, some maroon leaf, red-blooming cannas, sorry, and maroon leaf coleus. There's a fine-textured annual in there. That's I think it's, I forget what it is. It's an aquatic type annual, and it kind of looks like a, you know, well, whatever it is. There's 2 different plants out there right now that, you know, at 5:30 in the morning, I couldn't think of what they were, so oops. Must be old age. I don't know what's happening to me. Anyway, but as around Stan Musial really looks nice. Some of the employees, I know there's no game today, but the employees are already starting to show up that early in the morning. I was there around, 6:30 or so. But as you headed southward along the walkway and go down some steps, there's some crabapple trees, too, with the fruits are starting to turn red underneath plantings, a sweet potato vine, and dragon wing begonias, which have red flowers. And there are some cannas as well and some more liriope. Down the steps, the oak leaf hydrangea, and all the elm trees have been limbed up so nobody can get poked by any kind of branches that are too low. And it's all surrounded by a short wrought iron fence railing type thing with the STL Red Cardinal logo there. As the stadium circles, 6440 races above. In the final few beds, there's also some PG hydrangeas, not the oak leaf, but a different one, some begonias, and some other annuals as well. Each square bed also has an elm tree in it, too. So the doorway address right at this part of the stadium is 400 South Broadway. As I said, workers were arriving. The sky was really getting bright quickly, so as the sun starts to come up, it does not fool around, and it is super bright out there right now. So 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Questions, concerns, or comments. But I will tell you, water, water. Your plants need water. Your landscape needs water. Your lawn needs water. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline.
Once again, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. I've started to, decentralize as far as annual-wise and summer growth and stuff like that. Many of my are some of the plants in our landscape, and I've cut down all the cannas, started to move them into the garage, so the potting mixes that they're in, basically all these are in pots, can dry so I can shake off the potting mix and then store the bulbs for the wintertime. And my zoysia is starting to get a little bit of that brownish tint to it, but even though you have zoysia and your lawn may be starting to brown too, it still needs to get some moisture, so please do some watering. Let's go to Judy's yard first here on KMOX. Hi, Judy.
Hi, Mike. We had our lawn aerated and top seeded, and then by a lawn service. 2 days later, I came home and saw that they had cut the grass. I thought the deal was after you had that done, you left it alone until you got sprouts up to like 3 inches. Is that correct?
Well, you see, once it germinates, you should allow it to get to 3 inches. But before germination, it doesn't really matter that much. I'm assuming the seed's in good contact with the ground. So even, let's say, the vacuum sort of action created by the mower blades shouldn't disturb it too much. But again, if it, the seed has started to germinate, which is not going to germinate in 1 day or 2 days,
okay,
then you got to let it go to, you know, 3 inches for the blade. So that way, that tells you the root system is probably adequately anchored into the ground, so it won't suck it up.
Good. Can you tell me roughly how long it takes for those seeds to germinate?
It depends upon soil temperatures, but usually any place between, let's say, 7 and 12 to 14 days.
Okay.
The ground is pretty warm right now, so it's probably going to be the shorter time period. But I always sort of like, like I said, I have zoysia, so we don't do any seeding anymore or anything. But I like to have some kind of little test plot someplace where some seed can be put in a spot where I can kind of watch that seed as far as germinating in a pot or whatever, not in a pot, but in a, you know, some place where it's away from everything else and just watch it. And that makes it easier than getting down on my hands and knees looking for germinating seed.
Okay. Great. Well, good. I thought, did we just waste our money on that? But we're in good shape as long as I tell them to stay away this coming up week and
right.
Let it be.
And I'm assuming you're doing the watering, correct?
Like crazy.
Okay, good. Because that's what you should be doing.
I know. It drives my husband nuts. Stop with the watering. It's like, no, we just spent a lot of money.
Right.
This stuff needs to grow.
You aren't kidding. And you got to germinate, you got to trigger the germination. And once it germinates, then you got to make sure it stays healthy, and moisture is the way to do that.
Great. Thank you so much.
Certainly. My pleasure. And now let's go to Tom's yard. Hi, Tom.
Morning, Mike.
Morning.
Love our show.
Thanks for having me on your show.
We're so lucky that you do this for us every week. Hey, I have a couple questions for you. I have my tropical plants out on my my porch, and is this a good time to bring it in, or should I wait a little bit?
No, you can get them ready. I mean, check the stems, check the leaves, the underside leaf and everything. Check the soil for fungus gnats. Get everything all taken care of before you bring them in, but now's a good time to start getting, you know, that evaluation, overview and everything else, and then bring them in within, before probably, I would say mid-month would be an ideal circumstance, but, you know, it's going to be weather-dependent.
Okay. The other question I have is do you have an alternative to Roundup? I cut down a bunch of honeysuckle, and those little boogers like to continue to sprout up on us, and I sprayed some of it with Roundup, but I'd like to get away from that if I could. Do you have a suggestion?
I would say just go to your favorite garden center. Now, are we talking about Roundup, the honeysuckle, the shrub type? Or are we talking about the vine type, or what are we talking about?
Shrub type.
Okay,
shrub type.
I would say go to your favorite garden center and just tell them that you want to, you know, what herbicide that they have that they'd recommend for killing shrubs. It's got to be one that will kill woody plants. Also one that's systemic. So, in other words, it gets absorbed into whatever you put it onto. Like I always like to make a cut and then paint the herbicide, you know, the shrub killer right on that open cut that I have just made. And then it gets sucked down and kills not only the above ground growth, but the below ground growth both.
Okay. Well, thank you. Have a great day. Send me a beautiful one.
Well, you do the very same thing and enjoy. Yeah, honeysuckle, I was at a house not too long ago, and man, they had some honeysuckle. Unbelievable. But remember, if you've got honeysuckle and you're on a hillside, you take that honeysuckle out. That honeysuckle, as aggravating it is and everything else, and as aggressive it is, and from an invasive standpoint, it is anchoring the soil. So once you start taking out or killing, you know, the honeysuckle, you better have something to go into its place, or you're going to have a major erosion problem. So just realize it is doing something that is useful and purposeful, but, you know, as long as being invasive. I'm not saying it should stay, but I'm saying just be prepared to make sure that you, as you're taking it out, you're doing it with a thought process of minimizing or eliminating the possibilities of erosion. Let's go now to Nancy's yard. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. we have a question about honeysuckle, bamboo. And we live in Festus, and it's all rocky, so we wanted to see if you could tell us how to get rid of it and if we can burn it.
You can burn it. It probably won't do that much because it'll only kill the above-ground growth. It won't kill the below-ground growth. But bamboo is a grass plant, so you can get a grass killer, but you better get a grass killer that is really pretty strong. And just realize that if you've got the golden groove bamboo, it could take multiple years before you're finally going to eliminate it entirely.
So do you think we should just dig? Could we just dig it all up?
Oh, yeah. You can definitely do that. I don't know if you've heard the story where when I worked at the botanical garden, I dug up two pieces of root of the bamboo from the Japanese garden, took it to my parents' house in Ellisville, planted it, and then it exploded. And my father, he totally disliked it. My mother liked it. But for my father, for Father's Day, I had to go out and dig up bamboo roots because they send up shoots, you know, 4 or 5 or 6 feet away from, you know, existing canes coming up out of the ground, and it was prolific. Now, I will tell you also, now my parents have been passed away several years ago, but just the other day I happened to be in West County for an appointment, and I drove down Maple Lane, which that's where this my house I grew up in was, and I looked in the backyard through the off the street, and it looks like they finally eliminated the bamboo, so it took about 30 years.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, this was a huge colony. It was probably like 100-plus feet long and about 30 feet wide. It was going into all over the place. It was nutty. I was stupid to plant that.
Oh, wow. Well, we've got a pretty big chunk of it, and we tried cutting some of it last year, and it just doubled and came back. And
right.
The shoots are really tall. But since it's all rocky there, we didn't know if we could dig it up, if it'll keep coming back or try to. So you think we should dig it and also use a real strong grass killer?
Right. You could use a grass killer, or it is kind of woody, so you could use that. Anything that's systemic, again, something that's going to go down and kill the root system. And probably if I was going to dig it, I'd use a digging fork, not a shovel. Because a fork, especially if it's rocky, you just want to pry. The roots are not that deep. You just want to pry the roots up and then yank them, cut them and yank them off. So you don't have to, let's say, dig up big chunks of soil. You just need to dig up the actual root system.
Well, we're thinking about using heavy equipment because we can't do this by hand. It's way too big.
All right. So like a backhoe or something?
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Certainly. Wow, that's going to be a wild circumstance. Now let's go over to Jan's yard. Hi, Jan.
Hi, Mike. A couple questions. I've had some mandevilla on my patio for years. They're glorious. But this year, for the first time, I think I have powdery mildew.
Ooh.
So a couple questions. It's also the first year that I've used styrofoam peanuts in the bottom of my large containers. Could that have caused the problem?
No, I wouldn't think so.
Okay. And then are my containers infected for next year? Do I have to get rid of everything in that container to plant my mandevilla again?
No, I mean, you're bringing the mandevilla in, I'm assuming.
Actually, I throw them away.
Oh,
and
do you?
Buy again. Yeah.
If you're getting new
ones,
save
them, doesn't work.
There shouldn't be any kind of, let's say, residual from it, because this powdery mildew is a result of humidity and the environment and things like that. So that's why this year it's occurred and it hasn't historically done so in the past. But I wouldn't worry too much about it.
Okay.
What I would do is maybe once you throw your mandevilla away, stir that that potting mix up where you put them into, and just that's probably all I would do. I wouldn't worry too much.
Okay. All right. Great. Perfect answer. Thank you so much.
Well, great. I'm glad I could help, and thanks
okay,
for having
thanks,
me on
Mike.
Your show.
Bye-bye.
And now why don't we head over to Mary's yard? Hi, Mary.
Hi, Mike. Calling from Soha. Southampton. I have zoysia grass, and I have a question. How soon can I winterize? Because I haven't I have not done that in a few years, and it's been looking a little worse for the wear in the springs, especially. The rain helped fill in some of the spots. I thought maybe it caught something, a virus or something. But anyway, how soon can I do that?
I don't understand what you mean by winterize.
Well, like the winterized fertilizer.
No. Don't but fertilize always going into wintertime. That's the worst thing you could possibly do.
Good to know.
Because they got to head towards dormancy, and the fertilizer will prevent that. And then if we get a severe, cold snap or something, it could kill it all off because it's kind of like confused. Mm-hmm. Why am I growing and it's wintertime? And so no fertilizer this time of year whatsoever. Yes, best thing you can do is just, keep it watered, keep it looking as good as you can. Then fertilizing for zoysia or any kind of warm season grass occurs in the spring and early summer.
Good to know. Do you have time for one more question?
Sure.
We cut down a flowering plum tree summer before last, this past summer, and still have a tree ring around it. And I've been trying to plant things in there around it just to kind of camouflage it till it, but everything dies. Is that because it's deteriorating and taking everything down with it? Or is there anything? I was thinking about putting something like some of our tiger lilies. I think that's what they are, those orange lilies that like to our South City yards, that are growing along my fence.
I would say I'd wait a little bit because even though I don't, flowering plum trees or flowering cherry trees or any kind of small ornamental tree doesn't have a huge trunk, doesn't have a huge root system or anything else. Mm-hmm. But still what's happening is it's all imploding right in that spot. And I would just not waste my time, energy, or money putting anything there yet. I maybe put an inch or two of compost over the spot and just kind of make it look nice from that standpoint. Put a bird bath there temporarily or something along that line, and then wait for another year or two before you try to do any kind of planting in that spot.
Maybe a flower pot.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. And
certainly.
Thank you for doing this for 25 years. Congratulations on your anniversary.
Well, thank you. Yeah, how can I believe it? I've been here that long. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Once again, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. You can start doing some pruning on your trees, too, like limbing them up if you'd like to or those type things. You don't necessarily have to wait until wintertime to do it. We're probably past the high disease season. That's why you don't want to do it in the heat of the summertime, except I say that, and now I'll turn around and say summertime is really the best time to minimize the sap flow, so you'd be pruning your maples at that time. So there's all kinds of this and that's and everything else. So anyway, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Questions, concerns, or comments? Aaron, how are you today? Hello, Aaron.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Very good.
Got a question for you. I've got a cool season grass at my home. It's a mixture of bluegrass and fescue.
Mm-hmm.
I've been pretty happy the way it turned out this year. Plenty of water, a little fertilizer at the beginning of the season. My big problem now are voles. Any suggestion on how to get rid of these things? I was cutting my grass yesterday, and I saw this little pitcher's mound, and these voles are driving me crazy.
Well, pitcher's mound, that's actually a mole that's doing that.
Really?
Yeah. The moles have two different tunnels. One on the surface, that's the one where they're looking for earthworms. So that's their feeder tunnel. The one that's below is once they, let's say, get full because they've had enough earthworms or millipedes or whatever they've eaten, they have a lower tunnel that goes back to their sleeping den. So they when they're on the surface, they can just raise the soil up as they tunnel along. But the other tunnel is about 6 or 8 inches, a little deeper, so they have to push soil up at certain areas. So that's what you have. You have a mole problem.
Okay, yeah. And, I've contacted pest companies, and I was amazed at some of the prices that they quoted me. I've tried videos on YouTube. I even applied plenty of Grub-X, to eliminate what they may be feeding on.
But that Grub-X is grubs are a minimal amount of food for them. The majority, 80% of their diet is earthworms. So if you have them in your yard, first of all, congratulations, because you have a nice yard, or you wouldn't have any earthworms in there. Unfortunately, earthworms attract, you know, moles. But, yeah, getting rid of grubs means nothing to the moles. They could care less. It's sort of like when you go to a restaurant, you're heading there for probably a full dinner. You may have an appetizer. That's what a grub is to a mole, as he's tunneling along. Oh, here's a grub. I'll go ahead and eat that, but I'm going to continue because that's just an appetizer. I need to find my meal, my entree, and that's the earthworms.
Gotcha. All right. Any suggestions on how I can get rid of these things?
Well, basically, I mean, it's the traps are the most effective. Now, some people have called in over the years and say it's very vicious to kill them with traps because it spears them and chokes them. But you got to set traps. You got to have multiple traps. You know, find out which areas, tunnels, surface tunnels, are popping up. Set the traps there. If you don't get a mole that day, I mean, some people sit there, you know, with a shovel and watch for the areas to pop up and then pop them up out of the ground with their shovel. Some people I've heard, you know, pour gas into the mole tunnel, but to me that kills the ground. So there's,
right,
yeah, you know, there's a lot of different crazy things.
Okay. I'll continue to research it.
But really the most effective thing, if you go to the botanical garden, they got moles there. There's no getting around it, but they use the traps.
Okay.
And then if you got kids or pets or anything, you set the traps, then you put an upside-down bucket over the top of it to, you know, and something to keep it from blowing.
Okay, great. I appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Certainly, my pleasure. Now let's go over to Marie. Hi, Marie.
Hello.
Hi, Marie.
I've got a couple questions. So one, I've been told that we have fungus on our dogwood and that it will kill it. Is this true, or should I be scared?
Well, where's the fungus?
On the leaves?
Generally, I guess it possibly could. What's it doing to the leaf?
It's making them kind of curl up, and, you know, of course, they're falling off this time of year.
Sure.
And they said they won't come back, and the tree will die.
It's, you know, that very well could be the case because I can't see exactly what's going on. But did a dogwood, other than when did this start happening? When it really got hot? When it could have just been the result of all the rain we had in the springtime.
That's what we thought.
And so when you uncurl that leaf, what does it look like, you know, when you have it, let's say, flattened out? Is there any spotting? Is there any is there any foggy look to it? Is there any discoloration?
I can't say that I've looked.
Oh. Well, anyway, first of all, I would say don't panic yet, but just be conscious of the fact that, you know, it could be problematic. And how old are these dogwoods, or this dogwood?
Oh, goodness. Well, you think, Jim, about 10 years?
Well, that's fine. I just wanted to go out and look at the end of the branches and see if you got the little, you know, flower buds for next year already set. Because that sort of indicates the tree is overall healthy, and it's setting the flower buds for next year.
Okay, would a spray help?
This time of year, no.
Uh-huh.
With any kind of fungus problem, first of all, when somebody says fungus, they should have told you what kind of fungus. But go to your favorite garden center and take a couple leaves, show them. And then next year, when the leaves are about halfway out, make the first application of a fungicide for that specific type of leaf problem that you're having. And then about every 2 weeks for about 3 or 4, you know, applications, spray the leaves. But to spray this time of year or to spray after its presence is causing problems is a waste of time and money and everything else. So with fungicide, you've got to anticipate the problem and then stop it before it starts.
Okay. And what should I look for on the leaves?
Just any kind of discoloration or anything.
Uh-huh, okay. Yeah, well, you know, they're turning now anyway. They're turning red.
Right.
And I was kind of wondering also, is there a mite that would kill little bunches of needles on a long needle pine? Or
no, those are regular spiders.
Those are spiders.
Yeah.
Okay. Should they be sprayed?
Nah, well, if you want to go out there and because your plants need to be watered, just take a hose and try to, you know, wash them off that way.
Uh-huh. Okay. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Certainly. Yeah, it's a little bit distracting because of, I mean, this year has been more spiders than I ever remember throughout the entire region on different kinds of plants. I've got them on boxwood. My Mugo pine gets them occasionally and things like that. I either just pull them off myself, and then sometimes they come back, and, you know, it's just, those are spiders, are not spider mites.
Uh-huh. Okay, thank you.
Certainly. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Once again, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, this is Mike Miller. We're getting near the end. You've got about another week or so if you're planning to do some overseeding of your cool season lawn. So, and by even putting it down this late, you're kind of getting on the cusp. But core aerate, do the normal stuff that you'd normally do. Don't just go out there and throw the seed down and expect something to happen, because it will not. Especially if you have not dethatched or raked or core aerated or anything. The seed is just going to land. It's never going to come in contact with the soil, and it may germinate, but you're never even going to be conscious of it. So it's at the very, very end of any kind of overseeding at all. So let's go back to the phones, and where should we head? Let's go over to Chuck's yard. Hi, Chuck.
Hey, good morning, Mike.
Hi.
Hey, I've got mostly zoysia in my yard, and it's starting to go dormant finally. And I've noticed that in the backyard area, there appears to be spots like fungus. And a couple of years ago, maybe three, I got infected with that chinch bug in the front yard, took care of that and resodded. And now I'm wondering if, well, one, if it's a fungus, is there any reason to treat it at this time of year? And secondly, if it's chinch bug, should I have that checked or just wait till the spring?
Well, you can look and find out if it's chinch bugs yourself. Just get down on your hands and knees with a magnifying glass and look real close, because you've had a history of it. And you know what the damage does look like from chinch bugs. And they can be really damaging to zoysia. If it does happen to be, let's say, some kind of zoysia fungus, this time of year application is a total waste of time, money, and energy. So next year, just keep it in mind that you, if it's not the chinch bugs, that it is a fungus problem. And just like I was explaining to the lady with the dogwoods, you got to put the fungicides down before the problems start. Or since you've already probably have some dead spots, you know, where this zoysia is, has died out, spray those spots for sure, but spray thing areas around it too, so it doesn't spread and get any worse. And then plan on just getting some, let's say, zoysia plugs or a piece of zoysia sod and cutting it up and placing it back in those spots.
Okay. All right. That's good advice. And the other thing, last week I heard you mention to a lady who, I think it was a pin oak tree, where she was saying tips of limbs were dropping instead of leaves. I had the same problem with my holly trees back in February, where the normal time when the leaves start dropping, actually they were the tips of limbs with six or eight leaves on them. Is that the same squirrel problem you mentioned for a holly tree?
You know, generally, you know, squirrels don't fool around with holly trees all that much. So I'm not saying it is, but you can always tell if it's a squirrel by looking at, you know, let's say the branch or the little twig piece on the, you know, when you just pick it up and look at it, if it's almost a perfect 45-degree angle cut, then it's definitely a squirrel.
Okay, but if it's not a squirrel, and again, the trees seem to do well this year. I was worried that they were dying or something, but they seem to be doing fine. But if it's not a squirrel, is there something else that would cause that?
Generally not. Not with holly, unless it, you know, I mean, it would have to be something. You know, I can't think of anything that's going to, you know, climb a holly and, you know, let's say chew off branches or twigs or the end of a branch or something like that. So I'm not exactly sure what that is.
Okay. Well, I'll watch it again this year, see what happens.
Right.
Check it out. All right. Thank you very much.
Certainly. Yeah, maybe we should all start setting video cameras on our plants, and so we can watch who's on that tree, who's on that holly. Well, anyway, enough. But let's go now to John's yard, and John lives in Chesterfield. Hi, John.
Good morning.
Hi.
I have to paint my picket fence in my front yard this fall, and I got one spot. I have a nice rose bush that I can't get to the, like, 2 feet of fence on either side of it. How soon can I start cutting that back?
Ideally, you'd wait for a little bit because you want the rose hips to form, so the, you know, rose heads into dormancy. But since you've got to do it, you know, I don't know how soon you want to start painting or anything else. I'd hold off as long as you possibly can and then do the pruning of the rose at that time. But generally, your roses, you want to make sure that they've been pruned. you know, back if you're going to do any kind of pruning, if they're shrub types, sounds like what it is, which don't need
to hybrid tea.
Oh, it
hybrid
is? Wow. Yeah. So it must be a very robust hybrid tea. So
yes,
usually,
it is.
So usually you're going to put you're going to prune your hybrid teas back at, let's say, towards the end of this month, and then put 4 to 6 inches of mulch on them. So that's probably what I would. If you can wait that long, I would do that. If not, then just go ahead and prune them.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yep. And don't prune any flowers off on the rest of the shrub or anything else, because, again, you want those rose hips, those round balls where the flowers were, to be there, because that triggers for the rose to say, oh, I'm going to head towards sleep. So thanks, John.
Right. I know. That's why I was asking.
Right.
Is there any chance if I prune them now that they'll keep growing enough to make some rose hips?
Probably not.
Oh, okay.
All
right.
Yeah. So I'm not saying it's not possible, but generally it's not going to happen this late in the season. Let's head over to Tammy's yard. Hi, Tammy.
Hi, good morning. How are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two questions. First of all, getting back to John and his hybrid tea rose, but what if it's a rose bush, like a knockout rose bush? Mine's looking pretty straggly at the end of the season right now, and I was really wanting to trim some of that up. Can you do it this season? Can I do it right now?
I would, again, I'd wait as long as you possibly can. If it's really aggravating, okay. Yes, but don't cut any more than like 1/3 of it off. Some people cut them back real severely, cut them back to like a foot or so, then they have big, huge, mature ones. But I just, that to me is a little bit drastic, because you don't know if they're going to recover. It's kind of a roll of the dice. So if you hold off as long as you possibly can, and then do the pruning.
Okay. And then my second question is, I have some tropicals that I've in the past not messed with, just gotten rid of them, and like the mandevillas. I have four mandevillas. I was wanting to bring them in. Is there anything special that I need to do? I have a southern window, but it doesn't get a whole lot of light.
Ooh.
It's a kitchen window. Anything you suggest?
I would say if you're really serious about these things, I'd get some grow lights and maybe put them in the basement under grow lights. Because this window doesn't sound big enough or adequate enough, for four mandevilla vines, because I'm assuming they're fairly good size.
They are.
Yeah. So
would I expect them to drop their leaves?
You could expect it. Yes, you can expect a total nightmare as far as the amount of foliage it's going to drop and everything else.
Okay.
So that's sort of the downside, but it's certainly worth a try. But just realize that they've had a robust summertime. You've taken good care of them, obviously, because you want to bring them inside. But the indoors is a completely different world for them. And the amount of light, the amount of moisture, everything else, you've probably got a dehumidifier in your furnace or something along that line. Maybe you have a humidifier, but that's not going to be enough, let's say air moisture.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Certainly. Yeah. I've got two kaffir lilies that I bring in. These are plants that my great aunt Cleo gave me when I first moved back from California. I've had them for all these years because I moved back here a long, long, long time ago. And I'm almost to the point now, I have one still in a large pot. I've kind of put in a smaller pot and it doesn't like it so much. But I'm almost to the point where it's 70 years old carrying them down the basement steps and everything else. But I got my grow lights, got the timer on and everything else in the basement. So I'm going to give them maybe one or two more years and then decide what I want to do after that. I might just end up taking some divisions of them and bringing them inside. But other than that, that's about the only things I save myself. Except then, of course, I say that. And I have the elephant ears, I have the canna bulbs, I have all those that I have in pots. I got to dump the pots out. And I do that in the garage, let the potting mix dry, shake it off, then clean all the roots, the tubers and everything off. And then I put them in cardboard boxes and then bring them inside and put them in the basement too. But I don't put them under grow lights or anything else. I just store them, in these cardboard boxes with newspaper layers in between. And also, the other day, Brightside St. Louis, the bulbs that I had ordered from them came. And so consequently, now I have about 175 bulbs that I got to get planted. I'm not into a panic doing it. I'm going to probably wait towards the end of the month. But I might put, usually I put them in the soil, but this year I'm going to put them in the ground, at least some of them, just for fun, because I want to do something a little bit different. So with the bulbs, how deep do they go? Whether they're crocus, whether they're aranthus, whether they're tulips, whether they're daffodils, it doesn't matter what it is, about 3 to 4 times the diameter of the bulb, that's how deep you want to plant them. So just remember that. You plant them too shallow, and it could be problematic from a cold standpoint and everything else. Also, remember, squirrels do not know where these bulbs are. And if they're planted at the proper depth, the squirrels can't dig down and get the bulb out. So what usually happens is the bulb is actually killed because of the depth it was planted. So the squirrels are just digging because you've churned up the soil and planted. So Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after the news.
KMOX and your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Now, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. Guess what? I'm going to be giving the tip of the trowel shortly, but before Mr. Kelly gets out of here, could you recognize any of those birds that sing in my new theme song?
I haven't. I'll have to listen. I did not hear a hummingbird.
I didn't either.
I know them really well. You can hear their little chirps.
And it sounded like finches, but I'm not positive.
I'll have to listen more closely next week. I'll do that and try to identify them. Okay. You know, that tape could have come from my backyard.
Really?
It could have. There are mornings where there's a lot of them out there.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
You got the ideal place to live.
Next time I'm going to get you one with the peacock. There is no mistaking the peacock.
Sounds great. Well, thanks, Brian. And take care of yourself. He's not feeling well, so he came in. So thank goodness he did. So if you do have any questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. And by the way, thanks for having me on your show. We're here to discuss plant selection, cares for, ups and downs. Yes, you can buy trees and shrubs and things like that and plant them. You got probably until the ground freezes to get them into the ground, so there's not a problem doing that. It's the time to take your summer bulbs out of the ground, and it's the time to be putting your winter, next spring bulbs into the ground. So that's transition between those. Cool season vegetables and things like that. Your herbs, some of the herbs are hardy. They can make it through the wintertime with not any kind of problems. Some of them will look pretty good, like rosemary. Even I've tried it up in window boxes close to the house on the windowsill, and still they don't make it through our winter times. But that's one of my favorite as far as, herbs go, smell-wise and everything else. Don't use it too much eating-wise. But your lawn, you've got cool season lawns. You've got another week or so to get the overseeding done if you want to do that. It's time to set your mower blades. It's probably about 3 to 4 inches. So make sure that you take care of that. So if you have any questions about perennials, roses, trees, shrubs, vines, or water gardens. And water gardens, just keep the debris. If you do have koi in your water garden, keep the leaves and everything out of there, because the leaves get in there and they'll sink down to the bottom and they'll start rotting, and it could cause some major problems for your koi. Koi meaning goldfish. And remember, my answers, comments, and concerns is not the only garden path to take, but strictly offered to you to consider. Across the big board is Alex, and he's producing again today. And during the week, I spend my time doing landscape consulting, which I call a walk and talk. If you'd like for me to come to your home and help you with aesthetic problems, problem solving, or whatever it happens to be, you can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com, and on the homepage, my email address and phone number are listed, and I can come to you. We'll set up a time where I'll come to your home, and I'll share my 40-plus years of experience, landscape design, plants, care, and maintenance. Tip of the trowel is a special recognition for individual group or a situation that's made an impression on me, and it's brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. A tradition that was started by my mother as far as like decorations on the outside of the house and really on the inside of the house as well, I've carried on. And so I want to, there are some people that have done some spectacular decorating already, Halloween-wise, seasonal-wise, you know, harvest-wise and things like that. So a tip of the trowel goes out to all the houses that we drive by or I walk by when I take my morning walks. And there's some people that have some great imagination. And I'll tell you, you know, we sometimes just go and just check out some of the stores with all the, let's say, seasonal stuff that's available. Some of these inflatable things, they are absolutely massive. I can't believe, you know, and I guess they're going to start showing up in people's yards. I don't know what happens to them at the end of the season if they don't sell, but I guess they're easy to store. But there's a place over by Carondelet Park, and it's a giant spider web with a giant spider. It's one of our favorite houses, so they always do a great job. So a tip of the trowel goes out to those folks, everybody that does some outdoor decoration. It's just, it makes it really, really entertaining. So if you do have questions or concerns, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We're getting near the end of the season, so don't purchase, even if you can get them at a big discount, like chemicals that are liquids, because you can store them, just make sure they don't freeze. You know, so store them in a situation where they're going to, wherever, even your garage, if it stays above freezing in there, then you should be fine with it. Any kind of granular type stuff, just make sure that the bags, you know, you can fold them up, seal them a little bit, and just make sure that they're going to stay dry. Don't let any kind of moisture, if they're sitting on the floor, sometimes humidity on the bottom of the bag can cause problems that way. So just watch out about doing that. Start feeding your birds, as Brian Kelly does year-round, but maybe you don't. And so thistle seed is a great one for finches, the oiled sunflower for the cardinals, and if you like the mourning doves, they just like a mixed seed mix, so various things like that. So if you do, let's see, what else can we take a look at here before we take a break? Oh, we've got three sugar maples as street trees, and one of them that's on the, I guess, the west side of the house, it's never really been all that healthy and blah, blah, blah. But anyway, it is dropping so many leaves, so be sure that you stay on top of the leaf debris, whether you use a mulching mower or whether you rake or whether you blow or whatever it happens to be. Speaking of blowing, thanks to two doors down Charlie, our neighbor, he came into the couple yards and he blew all the leaves back across the street into the park. So, I mean, this sugar maple has been dropping leaves really a lot. And so the rest of the other two sugar maples aren't dropping any leaves yet at all. But this one obviously is under stress, and that's why any kind of tree that drops leaves dramatically early, that's a stress factor. Now, also, we have a lot of sycamores in our neighborhood, and man, the sycamores really look, ooh. Their leaves, no green left at all. It's all just brown. A lot of the leaves are just hanging on. But still, the sycamores have really suffered because it has been so dry. And that's what you can anticipate. Early leaf drop can be as a result of that. So you want to take a call? Okay, maybe we'll go ahead and just take a break and we'll take some calls. We'll talk to Joyce first when we get back. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline.
Once again, Mike Miller on KMOX.
As promised, we're going to Joyce's yard. Hi, Joyce. Hello, Joyce. Joyce, yoo-hoo. I hear people in the distance. Uh-oh. You've been waiting for a long time. I guess we're going to have to let Joyce go and talk with Judy. Hi, Judy.
Hi, Mike. My husband's noticed that there's some kind of animal that is clawing around our house, around the base. We were wondering if it might be an armadillo and how to get rid of it.
It could be an armadillo. It could be a skunk. It could be a raccoon. So there uh-huh. could be several different things. Armadillo-wise, I'd say you should probably find out exactly what it is by calling a pet control, you know, a wildlife okay. control, whatever service, and let them decide, and then they can figure out what kind of traps or whatever you need to get rid of it.
Okay. Well, I sure appreciate your comment, and I enjoy your show.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me on your show. Yeah, it could be an armadillo. I haven't seen any in our neighborhood yet, but I certainly have seen them, you know, getting in close proximity. I've seen some in South County, and we're in South City, so sooner or later.
We're in Imperial. I've seen them out on the, on the road up there.
Right, definitely. So, yeah, it could be an armadillo. And I... maybe what you should do is try to trap it and then turn it into a pet.
Oh, that might be kind of smelly.
Yeah. That's true. But they are so freaky looking. It's just kind of incredible.
Sure are.
Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate it, Jim.
Yeah, thank you. Yep. Bye-bye.
And now let's go to Charlotte. Hi, Charlotte.
Hi, Mike. I just was calling regarding the lady who called in about the Mandevilla vines.
Mm-hmm.
I have two. And one's white, one's pink. They're huge. They're gorgeous. And I cut them back, put them in the garage last year under a light, and watered them periodically. And they came back this summer out on the deck just beautiful.
Perfect. Good idea.
They did have this little, like, crystallized white stuff that came out where I trimmed them back. Mm-hmm. But I wiped all that off, and they just bloomed beautifully this summer.
Well, that's probably crystallized. Wasn't that just the sap?
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
Yeah.
It was sticky. So.
Right.
So, well, I just want to let her know you can keep them.
Yeah, so is your garage heated?
No, it's not.
So I'm assuming you didn't have them sitting on the floor then?
No, they were sitting up on a workbench with
a
grow light over it.
Right. Okay, so that makes sense because you set stuff on the floor, even though your garage may, in theory, not get to a freezing temperature, the floor might, and it could damage the root systems of the thing. So it sounds like you got a great system.
Yep, it worked perfect. So if she wants to keep them, she can.
All right. Sounds good.
Thank you, Mike.
Insight. And now let's go over to Ronnie's yard. Hi, Ronnie.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Very good.
I talked to you early this spring about my lawn. I had new sod put in a year ago in July. It turned out fantastic. Going forward, in the next 2 weeks, I'm going to aerate. And then I just heard you say I still got time to overseed. And then my plan is to put in compost. The question is, when do I put the winterizer down after all that?
Basically, you can put the winterizer down, you know, on top of the compost. It's just going to melt its way down. You can put it down whenever you really want out of that combination of things. The exact order doesn't make all that much difference, but other than... when you're putting the fertilizer down, just make sure that you water it in. So it's, in other words, starts the sort of the process of it breaking down and being available for your lawn.
Okay, so with the overseeding, though, how long should I wait before I put the winterizer down?
You know, I'd probably, maybe just a few days. I wouldn't, you know, be overly concerned with that because even though it's not, let's say, a fertilizer that promotes, let's say, new growth or something along that line, it should be, if you put it down at the correct rate and everything else, it shouldn't be problematic for a newly germinated seed.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Mike.
Yep. And now let's go over to Beth's yard. Hi, Beth.
Well, good morning, Mike.
Hi.
I really enjoy your show and have learned so much over the years just listening to you and your callers. So thank you.
Well, thank you for having me on your show.
Absolutely. My question for you this morning is, I have a wonderful Japanese maple. It's several years old. It's established, doing very well. And I noticed this spring, about 5 feet from the tree, a seedling that is now about 12 inches tall, and I would love to keep it growing. Do you have any pointers on what I should do over the winter?
It all depends on how much. You could leave it where it is, but probably what I would do is I would go to your favorite garden center and get some potting mix for starting plants, even though this is not a seed or anything else. But if you have some potting mix that is very, very well drained, I'd get a 1 gallon pot. I'd go out and dig it up. I'd put it in the pot and water it really well after you do that. And then find a place where you can dig a hole in some garden space or something and just drop the pot into a hole for the wintertime. And then, So in other words, you want to make sure you want the hole to be deep enough so everything except for the top inch or so of the pot, which will stay above the surrounding ground.
Okay, great.
That way you've got a transplant. So ultimately, and I'd grow it into a pot for a couple years until you decide where you want to, what's going to happen with it, what it's going to be, you know, what it really is going to become. If it's going to be the Japanese maple, if it's going to be something else, if it's going to, you know, whatever it happens to be. That way you've got it mobility-wise to move it wherever you want to.
Okay, sounds good. Fantastic.
Great. Thank I'm glad you. I could help. And speaking of that... Absolutely. We have, across, you know, down the alley, we've got, the power lines, the phone lines and everything else, and the birds sit there. Now, we've got a lot of junipers in our neighborhood, and a lot of these birds like the blueberries on the junipers. So consequently, they eat these blueberries, they come and sit on the, you know, on the phone lines, power lines, whatever, cable lines, whatever they happen to be, and then they go to the bathroom. So I get all these juniper seedlings, you know, in the bed spaces below, right along the garage, in that particular area, the side of the garage. And consequently, every year I go out and the seedlings are any place between 6 or 8 inches to 1 to 2 inches. I just dig up all these seedlings and put them in window boxes. And then I put the window boxes in front of our kitchen window, you know, for the wintertime so we can have some evergreens growing. And they really do quite well. So I just use a weeding tool to pop them up out of the ground and then, you know, water them in really well. Like I said, I have the potting mix that I use for all my pots. I don't get a specific potting mix for starting plant material, but I have great success doing that. So just realize you probably can have equal success with getting this Japanese maple. Figure the root system is going to be fairly deep, so water it the night before, and just you don't have to make sure that you're getting the entire 99.9% of the root system, but just get as much as you possibly can, and then get it down into the pot. So you'll have great luck with that. And now let's see, where should we go from here? Let's go over to Gloria's. Hi, Gloria.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I have a couple of questions for you regarding zoysia.
Mm-hmm.
Our zoysia was very thick this year, but towards the end of the season, I noticed this crawling kind of vine that weaves its way through the zoysia and has a little lilac or purple flower on it. Don't know how to get rid of it and don't know what it is.
Well, basically, it's an annual weed, so there's nothing you can do, you know, with it right now. It's called Speedwell. So it's Persian Speedwell. It's an annual cool season weed. So in other words, basically, you know, so did it grow through the entire summertime?
Yes.
Really? Because usually, I mean, yes. If this is, so maybe it's not Speedwell. So it has a purplish, bluish flower. It might be,
yeah.
It might be spurge then. So if it grew through the summertime, it's probably a cool, an annual weed, a warm season weed. So what you need to do next year when the yellow forsythia is in bloom, even if you don't have one in your yard, when it's in bloom in your neighborhood, get a pre-emergent and put the pre-emergent down. What that's going to do is kill these annual seeds, warm season weeds, as they germinate. So it's going to take a couple years to finally eradicate it if you have a huge amount of it. But that's kind of what it sounds like it is, since it's not the Speedwell. The Speedwell is a cool season one. But again, the pre-emergent goes down when the yellow forsythia is in bloom next spring. And the pre-emergent will kill all these annual warm season weeds as they germinate.
Okay. And then I bought some Scott's winter fertilizer. Is that appropriate for zoysia?
No.
No. Okay.
You don't want to put any kind of fertilizer down on your zoysia. It needs to go to sleep, and the fertilizer will prevent that, and then you could have some major temperature-related damage to it.
All right. Then what about aerating? When do you aerate zoysia?
All the zoysia stuff has to happen when it's actively growing. So you aerate the zoysia next spring when it starts greening up. You start fertilizing next spring when it starts greening up. So all the zoysia activities happen as it's actively growing. So you don't want to do it as it's headed towards dormancy of wintertime.
Okay, so aerating and thatching, do you need to do both? Is that too much for it?
No, I mean, you can, if you rake your leaves, I don't know if you have leaves, you know, from trees or whatever, that gets rid of a lot of the thatch right there. So you don't have to worry too much about the thatch. The core aeration is really to the advantage of your soil as well as your zoysia plants.
Okay, and then one last question. We had a beautiful Japanese maple, about 30 years old, and all of a sudden this year the leaves came out and then they started to dry up and fall off. And I had someone come and look at it, and they told me that the tree strangled itself, that when it was planted, the roots were not allowed to, you know, spread as they were supposed to, and they grew around the base of the trunk. Does that sound serious as far as taking that tree out and putting another one in that place of the same type?
No, it shouldn't be problematic. And strangling itself, I mean, I guess that could happen. But when you take the tree out, it should almost, if it's, you know, that was truly the case. To me, it sounds like it was an older tree, 30 years old, and all that rain we had drowned it. That would be my analysis, as opposed to the, you know, the root systems intertwining each other and strangling each other. That can happen. The reason why that happens a lot of times, people that install plant material, they just pull it out of the pot. It's a big, tight wad of roots. They don't separate those root systems at all, and they just stick it down in a hole, and the hole's about the same size as the root system was. And it's in heavy-duty clay soils, and that becomes a real problem because then the roots just keep twirling right around there because they can't push their way out into the clay soil. But if a tree lasted 30 years, I kind of don't think that's actually the case.
All right, so then if we have it taken out and want to plant another one in that place, do we need to build up that soil so that it's higher and the water doesn't rest there? Or should you plant a tree in that same spot?
You don't want to plant a tree. You can't plant a tree right in that exact location. There's too many roots and everything else, regardless of how the tree's taken out. So that's going to be real trouble. You can put it 4 or 5 or 6 feet away, but not right in that exact location. And just make sure when the hole is dug, it's 3 times the diameter of the root ball, but only about 80% as deep. So in other words, the top of the root ball is above the surrounding ground.
I see. All right. Well, thank you very much, Mike.
Certainly. My pleasure. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Once again, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, back to the phones we go. And if you have any questions or concerns, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We're headed over to Gail's yard. Hi, Gail.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
How are you?
Very good.
I have lawn service, and they already did a lime application about 1.5 weeks ago. I was out of town. They're supposed to let me know when they're going to do it, but naturally I didn't get the phone call. And they said it was in my package for every year. I don't know if that's necessary, but I had aeration last year, and I'm choosing not to do it this year, but they said I should still have overseeding. And from your conversation with another person, I'm on the cusp of the overseeding. And if I'm not having aeration this year, am I wasting my money?
Basically, aeration is really crucial with our crazy soil types that we have. So I would say core aeration every year would be something I would think would be important. Putting lime down, have they ever taken a soil test?
I don't think so.
So
no.
How would they know that your lawn needs lime? Lime changes the soil pH. And so consequently, just to assume that they need to put lime down, that's a routine that has been like done for years, decades ago. And now we're finding out that we can really create some problems by just doing something routinely that is not really needed that could be problematic for the lawn overall. So I would tell them, find out, ask them what the soil pH is, and if they don't know, then I would say no more lime gets put down in my lawn. But the core aeration, I would think, is something that every year at least should be done, if not twice a year. So
okay.
And
so I should tell them to go ahead and aerate if they're going to overseed it.
Definitely.
So,
yeah. And
okay.
And I always say, you know, obviously after the seed goes down, a half inch or so of compost, but, you know, sometimes that's a little bit, let's say, out there for some of the lawn services.
Okay. And then I had back surgery, so I didn't cut down the peonies yet. You know, is it too late to do that?
No, definitely get them cut.
At any time?
Yeah, get them cut and get them out of there because they probably have powdery mildew. And once they start laying on the ground, they're inoculating the soil next year. So when the root system starts pushing the, let's say, the foliage up through the ground surface, it can get those spores for the powdery mildew on the leaves right then. So cut them off, get rid of them, and do that every year. You could probably do it even around Labor Day if you wanted to.
Okay, yeah, I do it every year, but this year I didn't yet.
Right.
So as soon as possible,
yeah,
then,
absolutely,
right?
Yeah, absolutely, right. And like I say, okay. discard it. Don't just leave them lay after you cut them.
Right, okay. All right, thank you.
Certainly, my pleasure. And now let's go to Tracy's yard. Hi, Tracy. Tracy, are you there? Hello?
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you about what I want to ask you about these spots. All I think it got the disease, and some of them is not mixed. But when I put seeds down last year, I guess the disease still wasn't gone. I heard you tell somebody to buy plugs where the zorka grass is.
Yeah, you can't grow zoysia from seed.
I know that, but if I put the regular seeds down,
okay,
grass seed that you're right, it's grass seed down, like you buy at the store some good grass seed. Can okay. I put that down in the spots to grow regular grass?
So, in other words, well, if you rake it and get it all prepared and everything else, but you only have about a week to get the seed down because the temperatures are going to get cool enough that if the seed comes up, it could be problematic because our first frost could come later on right as the seed has germinated. So if you're going to put seed down in these spots, get it done ASAP.
That's why I tried to tell Alan Tree Service, and he told me I had to October. Because he was supposed to do it for me, but I told him, you said you had to get it down before the 15th.
Yeah, right, exactly. So by mid-October, the seed should be down.
Okay, so I put seeds down last year, and the grass is, I put seeds down last year, and the spots came back. So it's probably, I have to constantly, like you said, every 2 or 3 weeks put the disease stuff down.
Right, exactly.
Is that correct?
Yeah, and start doing it before before you start seeing any kind of bad problems in those spots. But even if those spots are still existing, I would recommend spraying it because this stuff could spread and spread and spread. So, just the system's a little bit off.
So next March I should start putting the
fungicide.
Yeah, I should start with like March.
Yeah, it's weather dependent, so I can't really put a date.
I'll just say April. So how often should I put it?
Every 2 weeks. First, out exactly what it is. Take a sample to your favorite garden center and let them take a look at it. They'll give you the best fungicide to take care of your problems. So thanks a lot, Tracy. Greatly appreciate it. Let's head over now to Tom. Hi, Tom.
Yes. I got a question on nuthatch. Lawn guy, it came up this summer, and he says, well, we got to wait till later to kill it. When should they be killing it, and what are they supposed to use?
Now, I don't know what nuthatch is. You mean nut sedge?
Yeah, like water grass.
Okay, so nut sedge. It's too late to do anything to it now. It's already headed towards dormancy. So next year, as soon as it starts showing up, then they should be putting sedge ender, by bonide or something along that line, specifically to kill that stuff because regular herbicides don't work on it.
Yeah. So they've already screwed up.
Yeah, you got to get it when it's already headed towards sleep. I mean, I've got some little spots that I leave in my yard just so I can kind of watch it and everything else. And so consequently, it's gone. It's headed towards dormancy. So any kind of herbicide that you put down this late in the season becomes less and less effective. And some of them are basically non-effective this late. And probably a sedge killer is one of those things. So next year, you know, have them watch it really closely, because it starts usually coming up. Again, it's always weather dependent. But sometime mid to late April, early May, that's when it starts showing up. Go after it right then. It doesn't have a waxy cuticle on the surface, and the herbicide for killing nutgrass will be right there then.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Yeah, and it's going to take several years to get it under control. 1 year is not going to work. It's going to take multiple years. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Once again, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, back to the phones we go. We're headed out to Winfield, and let's go into Pat's yard. Hi, Pat.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question. In mid-July, my family and I took cuttings off of my hydrangea bush and propagated them. I put them in a tub outside. They are doing great. They all rooted. They're growing new leaves. My question is they should come out of the tub on October the 20th. Should I put them in the yard, or should I put them in another pot to start growing and keep them inside over the winter?
What kind of tub are they in?
One of those like plastic storage tubs, and then I have all of them in pots. I have 9 of them in pots. I haven't watered them. I've kept the lid on it all summer. And if you look at the little pots that I put them in, the roots are just shooting out all over.
Basically, I would just... Can you just go ahead and leave them where they are?
Yes, but going into winter, would they be okay?
Yeah, they should be as good as like putting them into a pot, because then put them in a pot, you're going to sink that pot into a ground, and it sounds like they're already in a pot, you know, surrounded by soil, which would be actually, you know, help with the insulation of the cold weather.
Oh, so I can just keep them in that plastic tub and leave them outside where they're at?
Yeah, as long as there's drainage holes in the bottom of the plastic tub.
There are not.
Oh.
And I have not watered them because, you know, I was told not to water them because they make their own water and moisture, and it's kind of like a terrarium setting.
I would say if we have a downpour, it's going to drown them. So you're going to have to get them out of there.
Okay.
So I would just go ahead and maybe get some, like, 1 gallon plastic nursery pots, and maybe get some potting mix and just put maybe 1 or 2 or 3 of them in that 1 gallon pot. And with the new potting mix, don't take them out of the pot or anything else that they're growing in, and just then sink those pots into the ground into a bed space.
Okay. And another question about the hydrangea. I've had a hydrangea bush in my yard that has not, the hydrangea bush is doing great, but it hasn't gotten any flowers on it in about 3 years. 1 year, I just let it all go and no flowers. The next year, I cut it all back in the fall. Why would it all of a sudden quit flowering?
It's too old.
No. It's too old.
Yeah.
Well, so am I. So.
Me too. So.
So now if we grew... If we're trying these hydrangeas that we propagated, are they more likely to flower?
Yeah, they should, because they're younger plants. This plant is probably just, you know, it's past the... Did you take the cuttings from this plant?
Yes.
Okay, so it should be okay, but there's, I mean, like big regional nurseries that do production, they take cuttings off existing plant materials, and that's not to say that they take them off ones that don't flower, but I would say you should be fine.
Okay. Plus, I have to tell you, my hummingbirds are still here.
All right. Great.
These country birds are tough. Okay. Thanks. You have a great weekend.
You do the very same thing. And let's go now to Mary's yard. Hi, Mary.
Hi there, Mike. I love talking to you on a Saturday morning. I learned so much.
Well, thanks.
I'm calling because I have a tropical area outside that I've really been working on for about 2 or 3 years, and it's just gorgeous. But I'm going to bring everything into our heated basement. My husband puts up fabulous grow lights, but I don't know what to do with, like, the bird of paradise. Should I cut it off because it's really tall now and just leave, you know, like a foot or 2 feet of the base there. I got a fig tree, too, that's about 6 foot tall. Can I just watch all of them very carefully to be sure they're healthy and no bugs? And what about the elephant ears? I've got mammoth elephant ears. Do I cut those off with a foot or two of length and keep them in the soil that they're in? I need help.
Basically, with the elephant ears, you can just cut off all the foliage, all the stems and everything. You can pull them out, and they'll just, you know what an elephant ear looks like. It's just a round ball. So
okay,
you can just store it as a round ball. You don't have to grow it as a plant inside unless you just want to. The bird of paradise, if it's too tall to put into your basement or if it's too heavy, then just cut it off, leave it, and it's in a pot, I'm assuming is what you're saying. Just cut it off, bringing the pot in, and you don't even have to set the pot underneath the grow lights if you don't want to, but you can.
And what about the fig tree?
Yeah, the fig tree, the ficus trees, they are going to be, have you brought them in before?
No, I just got it. Well, yeah, I brought it in last year. I had just gotten it. It's about, now it's going to be 3 years old.
Yeah, so it's going to, you know, it's going to drop a lot of leaves and everything else, so just watch out from a, just an aesthetic standpoint with that.
Okay, and I tried the crotons last year, and of the five that I put under the lights, only one really came back.
Right, they don't do so well. They don't like grow lights. They don't like it inside.
Okay, so just get rid of them. And last but not least, I've got phenomenal geraniums. I mean, they're unbelievable bright red, hanging ones and pots. Should I cut those back? I mean, last year they made it beautifully through the hanging ones, like in the house.
Right. Yeah, my my grandmother always brought her geraniums in. She had the stem ones, and she had the hanging ones both. She just left them alone and just took, you know, put them down in the basement in front of windows. So that's all you really need to do.
Well, thank you so much. Just what I needed to know, and you'd probably cost my husband a few $100 less than he would have spent. So.
Oh, great. Let's see. You can just mail that check to me. No.
You've already been to the house, and you know, I followed all of your instructions.
Right. I recognize
Thank
your
you.
Last name.
Thank you, dear.
Certainly.
Goodbye.
And let's see if we can. Debbie, can you do it kind of quick?
Hello?
Hello, Debbie. Can you do it quickly?
Sure. I just want to know, first of all, we want to thank you for your show. And second of all, I want to know, when do you cut down hydrangeas, trim or cut them down to, you know, for the winter and that? And how far do you cut them down?
Basically, don't trim your hydrangeas at all. There's some,
don't
like the PG
them.
Hydrangea that blooms in the springtime. If you prune it now, you're not going to have any flowers next year at all. A lot of times...
There are the endless hydrangea. I mean, they get really high.
Right. I would say, unless you got to, I would say just leave them alone. The next year, if there's any stems that come out that don't have any foliage or anything, cut those off. Just leave them alone.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
A lot of
Bye.
People, it seems like we get these hydrangeas. Some of them just get old. But sometimes we knock them out of the sequence from flowering by doing the pruning. So, yes, you know, forevers, they bloom all summer long and everything else. And they do get tall, but hopefully you put them in a location where they're not going to be, you know, problematic for walkways and things like that. But cutting on the hydrangeas, we got to stop pruning them so much and see if we can get better success out of them. Because I would say, even, you know, on the phone call wise, there's always going to be some, and some of them because the hydrangea is older. But some of them are just because people are pruning them and getting them out of sequence of when their flower buds are ready to go. So thanks to everybody. Boy, oh boy, these last 2 days have been so nice and cool. So a hint of fall coming in the air, fall colors coming. So just take some time to take a nice deep breath and actually enjoy the outdoors. Mike Miller, I will see you next week.
Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, we're in it together. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on motherhood, wellness, self-love, and more. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.